Hello and welcome to Inside Business with Wendy Austin. We're talking about the business of religion today. The headlines first. The economy here shrank slightly in the third quarter 2017. Closure of the JTI cigarette factory likely acted as a drag on growth. Craigavon-based Almac Pharmaceuticals expands its Dundalk operation with a £30 million investment in laboratory, packing and distribution facilities. A bit of Euro schmoozing as Juncker pledges to keep the funding coming to support the peace process. And it contributes more than $1 trillion to the US economy and plays a big part in our lives. We're talking about the business of religion and faith on Inside Business today. How does your business deal with issues of religion and faith? For some, it's at the core of what they do. But here in Northern Ireland, with neutral workplaces, many companies leave the subject at the door. Does that lead to a lack of morality in business? Too much pursuit of mammon, perhaps? And what of the businesses which are actually selling religion in one form or another? Well, we'll explore all of this today with Charles Wookie. He's CEO of A Blueprint for Better Business. Rosamund Bennett is Chief Executive, Christian Aid Ireland. And Michael Kelly's editor of the Irish Catholic. Michael, how would you describe the Catholic Church in Ireland in terms of how it operates financially?
Well, increasingly more transparent. The church is subject now to a very stringent charity regulation on both sides of the border. It has to be said that in Northern Ireland that they were much quicker about these things than in the Republic. But nonetheless, in the Republic, the structures that are in place now are very stringent, and the church must operate according to that. The difficulty is that the Catholic Church in Ireland doesn't exist as one entity. You take the 26 geographical dioceses that the church breaks down into, and they break down into parishes. So you have more than 1,000 parishes which are charitable entities in and of themselves, and they have no particular financial relationship to one another. You could have one parish that's financially thriving, and the parish next door could actually be bankrupt. So it comes as quite a surprise to people that it doesn't exist as a single entity financially, and that has been the case where some dioceses have been in extreme financial perils, while other dioceses may be doing quite well, and there's no possible way that they can transfer funds to them in order to help struggling dioceses.
That's rather interesting. We'll come back to that in a moment, I think. Rosamund, what are the challenges and opportunities in running a charity like Christian Aid Ireland, particularly since it's so closely tied to church?
I think the biggest challenge for us in Christian Aid Ireland, and I think it's the same for a lot of other charities, is fundraising and income generation. And we get funding from the Irish government, and we get funding from churches and supporters, but it's very, very difficult to go out and get money from the public, and that is one of the biggest challenges that we have. But the biggest opportunities are the fact that the work we do is great, and the impact we can show, the impact of the work that we do, and we have an opportunity to engage with a lot of people right across Ireland.
In that case then, given the challenges of raising money, is it perhaps an advantage that you have that tie-in to churches? You have a bit of a captive audience in some ways.
I think it's always an advantage to be, you know, Christian Aid. We're the development agency of the church, Protestant churches in Ireland, and that is a huge advantage to us. But I'm also aware that the numbers that who are attending churches are declining as well, and you can't always just rely on one market. And the thing for us is our churches are work with us in partnership, and but we need to bring in as much income as we possibly can because the need is so great.
And we see it on our television screens and hear and read about it every day of the week too. Charles, a blueprint for better business. Now, that came about partly as a result of concerns that corporations had lost their moral compass. Tell us about all that.
Well, Blueprint is, I should start by saying, it's not a religious charity. Our aim is to challenge and support businesses to live out a purpose that serves society. It arose in 2012 as a result of a number of business leaders in London being really concerned by the breakdown of trust between business and society after the financial crisis and following a number of other things like the GSK corruption scandal in Mexico and BP's Deepwater Horizon. And they did an interesting thing, which was they said, look, we don't think business can sort this by itself because the level of cynicism is such that an initiative just led by business wouldn't work. But more fundamentally, they thought that what was really needed was something that came from society, in a way a kind of reset of the relationship between business and society. And they went to see a Catholic archbishop because of some work he'd done in the city immediately after the financial crisis. And they said, look, could you, we need to keep religion out of this, but the thinking that's here, the wisdom in these traditions of wisdom, is really powerful. And if we kind of find a way of making that accessible to business so that it's kind of faith enabled, if you like, but not faith led, we think this could really help, because there are a lot of people who are looking for meaning in their lives, who want a better story to tell about why business exists, and who just find the current narrative that we've had for the last 30, 40 years doesn't work anymore, and that business can't lead this, it needs something else. So he said, fine, I'll get involved, and he began to help. But it involved a group of people from different academic disciplines, philosophy, behavioural economics and others as well. But the faith contribution was part of it, and has endured as part of it as well.
How's it gone down?
Well, I think people are very suspicious initially if they think of something, well, you know, what's the hidden agenda? There must be a kind of religious motivation behind this. And the charity that we formed, I mean, Barbara Stocking, who used to run Oxfam, who chaired my trustees, was until recently is an atheist. She loves the thinking, but she says, you know, this isn't about doing God. This is about drawing on lots of wisdom in society to help make a difference. And I think once people understand that you're genuine about that and there isn't a hidden agenda, but you're wanting to make accessible a depth of thinking in society, which is really powerful, then people really get it. And they like it. And a chairman of a bank said to me, he said, do you know what? I really like the idea that there's a dotted line back to this body of teaching, that this hasn't been made up in some PR department, and that it really is trying to make accessible a depth of thought about what makes humans really tick and what makes societies flourish.
Let's hear for a moment from Dr. Brian Grimm. He's president of the US-based Religious Freedom and Business Foundation, which encourages companies and governments to see religious freedom as a means to growth. And I asked him how religion could be good for business.
Religious freedom is the ability of religious people and groups to practice their faith in society. And that often leads to people expressing their faith in terms of helping others, building hospitals, helping with charity, and also having their faith inspire what they do at work. So in all these various ways, whether through health or education or through the jobs that people do inspired by their faith, all of these things add to the success of an economy.
I mean, you've carried out research that shows that religion annually contributes $1.2 trillion to the U.S. economy. How's that broken down?
It's broken down into three categories. The one that's most surprising to people is the impact of congregations themselves. So in the U.S., there are 344,000 local congregations, that's churches, mosques, synagogues, and other places of worship. But attached, so each of these hire staff, they pay for services, they build buildings, they often own buses. And so all of that's economic activity right at the local level. And then attached to a number of these local congregations are schools and other types of outreach services. So in the U.S., almost one out of every three congregations has some form of job training or job outreach. So at the local level, that's a lot of economic activity that's benefiting the community. The second category is religious institutions. So that would be schools, charities, and hospitals, organizations like that. So in the United States, for instance, one out of every six people is going to a hospital is seen in a Catholic hospital. So that's a lot of health and well-being being provided to the country. So the operations of the hospitals themselves bring a lot of revenue in, but also the benefit they provide to communities, and then charities as well. And then the third category is one that's quite interesting and people don't look at too much, is either faith-based businesses or religion-friendly businesses. So faith-based businesses might be, for instance, the Knights of Columbus. It's a Catholic fraternal organization, and they have $100 billion. One of their services is life insurance, and they have $100 billion of life insurance in effect. And then the other category is faith-friendly business. So our largest chicken producer in America, Tyson Foods, hires a whole force of chaplains just like you might have in a hospital or in the military. They have chaplains in all their factories to minister to the needs of their employees. So they don't describe themselves as a religious company, but a very faith-friendly company. So those three roughly make up a third of this $1.2 trillion each.
Brian Grimm there on the economic activities of congregations in the States. Some huge numbers there. Michael Kelly, when we look back to what you were talking about at the start of the programme about individual parishes, some of them really feeling the financial pinch. How then do you go about getting the right people to advise on finances? I mean, is there a chance that eventually there'll be some kind of move to centralise all of that in the church?
Well, there's an enormous culture of volunteerism. Every parish in the Catholic Church has a finance committee that's made up of about a half a dozen local people, and quite often what you will find there is perhaps a local accountant, perhaps someone who works in the bank, someone who's a financial advisor, people who do this as their day job. They volunteer this for the parish.
It's a big responsibility for them, though, isn't it?
It's an enormous responsibility, particularly with all the regulation. Now, this used to be something that You simply were doing to ensure that there was good stewardship, that the parish finances were being looked after. But increasingly, you have legal responsibility now. And I mean, if things go wrong, then that obviously is an enormous responsibility for someone who is acting in a volunteer capacity. The huge push in the church in recent years would very much be transparency and accountability, so that no one person would be in charge of anything like this. No one person would be responsible, whereas perhaps in the past, the parish priest would have been responsible, and what he decided the money was spent on, that's what the money was spent on. Increasingly, there are lay committees supervising things like that. And then over a certain amount, the diocese, the bishop will supervise that. And then actually over a certain amount, the Vatican will in fact supervise if a parish wanted to sell a church hall, for example, and it was over a certain value. That's described in church law as the alienation of temporal goods. And they have to apply to the Vatican for special permission if that is over a certain amount. What they find in the parishes, though, the best way to fundraise, and I'm sure Rosamund would agree with this as well, is getting everyone involved in a small way. There are very, very few people in parishes who, if a hall needs renovated or the roof of a church needs fixed, who can come up with the £400,000 or £500,000 necessary to do that. But if you can get everyone involved in a very small way, giving £1, £2 a week, then it's a much more sustainable fundraising model, because you're not then worrying about annoying your key donor, but you have everyone in the community involved in a very small way. So, you know, if one of them goes off and joins another church, or they decide that they're no longer supportive of that project, it's not such a huge loss.
It's a bit like crowdfunding, really, Rosamund, isn't it? Getting everyone involved.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's we want to create a global movement for global change, and it is that movement that you can do, you know, with a small amount of money, you can achieve a lot. And I mentioned before, getting funds in is one of the hardest things. And it's true, if you can get people to do a small amount, like direct debit, then that provides a basis from which you can actually do development work. And that makes such a huge difference.
I was thinking, Charles, as I was listening to Michael talking about the volunteering aspect of that, you know, people from the community, from the parish, from the congregation, being part of what happens in their church. I mean, that, I would have thought, is the kind of thing that your organisation would be quite keen on, you know, to have people who aren't just indulging in selfish business behaviours, but who are actually doing something for the good of a greater cause.
Well, I think one of you're right, that one of the dominant mindsets, if you like, I think about business has been that business is fundamentally selfish and about just making money. And then to have a license to operate alongside doing that, it needs to do a few socially responsible things. So you've had the growth of kind of corporate social responsibility and opportunities for volunteering. But actually, there's a really profound challenge, I think, which a lot of leading businesses now are beginning to realise, which is that that model, you split those two things up, doesn't really work. And it's much more powerful for businesses to try and set themselves a purpose other than simply making money, to have a reason for being, in other words, that really serves society, and where making money is seen as an outcome of doing that. And if you do that and you try and live it out, which is not easy, then you don't need so much to do the other stuff, as it were, important and good as it is, such as volunteering to, as it were, justify your existence as society. The core business does that, and the social outcomes at the core business does that. So people can go past your door and say, I'm really glad these people are here. They're good for the world. It's not just they do something else on Friday afternoon, which justifies everything else. So it seems to me that there's something really exciting innovating about a way of thinking about business, which is much more human-centred and draws on and keys into this desire that we all have as people for meaning and for fulfilment. I think for us, one of the inspirations that we've taken from the religious traditions, not just Catholicism, is this idea that people are naturally meaning-seeking. And we all are. Religious people don't have a monopoly on caring for others and wanting to create a better world. But I think trying to recognise this spiritual depth in humanity, the meaning-seekingness and the desire for quality of relationships. And we don't stop being human. We don't stop having these things when we go through the office door. So I think there is a tremendous potential, actually, to become more aware of this in businesses. And in that way, both to give people more genuine personal fulfilment through their work and also to produce more profitable and successful companies.
Meaning-seeking, now that's a very interesting phrase, and actually it's something which has been very good for a business that I've been hearing from. It's a family business that really has religion at its core. Des Woods is from CBC Distributors. It supplies products, all kinds of products, to churches and to retailers across the world from its base in Newry. The company was started by Des's grandfather back in the 50s. It now stocks thousands of items. I've never seen as many. And I asked Des what all they do supply.
We have a lot of product. I mean, we probably have about 8,000 different lines of product, which sounds like a lot. But when you break them into the various categories, like we sell a lot of Christmas items, nativities, cards, gifts, a lot of candles, obviously. We also specialise in communions, confirmations, Easter product, St. Patrick's Day, and, you know, obviously a lot of general devotional items as well, and inspirational product, which is becoming bigger and bigger for us.
What are the most popular products?
Well, they all have a demand in their own way. We obviously do very well with Christmas. We offer the nativities, traditional nativities and gifts that are very popular in the UK in particular. But we sell throughout Ireland and the UK into the churches, obviously, and the shops and wholesalers buy a lot of our cards. So it's a wide range of demand.
So you talk about selling into churches, shops and wholesalers. It's strictly business to business?
Strictly business to business, yeah. We don't sell to the public as a rule. Obviously, we sell to the church in terms of their needs for candles and consumables. But the mainstay of the business is our articles for resale. So we would be selling to church shops, repositories, retail outlets, specialist religious shops, Christian bookshops, and then, of course, to wholesalers who want to buy certain aspects of our range, like communions or, you know, it's a very niche business, so there's not too many people offering the range that we do. We sell to a lot of the Catholic institutions, absolutely, but we also sell to a lot of Anglican institutions, a lot of the cathedrals in the UK, like York Minster, Westminster Abbey. You know, those are all customers of ours. So it's really got a wide appeal.
Des Woods there from CBC Distributors. You're listening to Inside Business with me, Wendy Austin. Don't worry, you haven't turned onto a different programme today, but we are talking about the business of religion and how companies and organisations can become more ethical and even be a force for good. My guests today, Rosamund Bennett, who heads up Christian Aid Ireland, joining us from our Brighton studio, Charles Wookie, who's chief executive of A Blueprint for Better Business, and the editor of the Irish Catholic, Michael Kelly. Michael, I'm guessing that companies like Des's are the type that would advertise in your newspapers because many of your readers would be buying his products.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things about a lot of the products that Des is selling there, there's a narrative, I guess, that Ireland, both north and south, is becoming more secular. And that's certainly true. But I often think that, you know, we're too secular to be very religious and too religious to be very secular. So things like Holy Communion, things like confirmation, things like baptisms, these are still rites of passage that happen. Even families who wouldn't describe themselves as religious, who wouldn't be churchgoers on a regular basis, still engage in these rituals. So you sometimes have the difficulty of people who perhaps haven't really engaged with institutional religion in 30, 40 years, wondering what it is you buy a child making their first Holy Communion. So, I mean, that's something that I find from acquaintances and friends of mine. They say, you know, you're interested in religion, aren't you? You know, I have a nephew who's making his confirmation. What should I buy for him? So there's still a captive market for things like that. I was smiling to myself when Des was talking about the nativity sets. We actually have a relationship with a number of Christian families in Bethlehem who hand carve nativity sets, and we sell them through the newspaper for them. It helps the local Christian community there in Bethlehem who are pretty under pressure. And I was there over the summer, and I had some samples. And anyone who's crossed between Jerusalem and Bethlehem knows that it's not that easy, and you have to cross through a number of Israeli checkpoints. And I think the Israeli soldiers got great amusement as they unwrapped all of my various packages and parcels and realised inside was nothing, only and nativity sets. Caused one of them to let me know that Christmas isn't until December 25th.
Yes, I did want an interesting time of year to be there with a nativity set, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I wonder, Charles, I'm just thinking when you look at the news at the moment, and we're talking about perhaps companies and organisations becoming more ethical, even a force for good, but you look at something like the whole Carillion scandal, if I can use that word. You want companies to ask themselves some pretty deep questions. When you look at a number of these big organisations, you think that perhaps they don't ask themselves many questions at all.
Well, yes, it's a complicated thing. I mean, Carillion is extremely complex as well, and I don't think we've yet got to the heart and understood precisely what's going on there. But you're right. I think I go back to what I was saying earlier, really, about I think what happened after the financial crisis. And if you look at, and it's not just in business, actually, when you see organisational failures of different kinds as well, at the root, very often, it is about the core purpose of the business that's somehow gone awry. And I think when people talk about a moral compass, in a way, I think one can think use that analogy to say, well, sometimes it's about people having a business focusing on a particular objective to the exclusion of everything else. So it's a kind of false north and not a true north. I remember reading the report of the Staffordshire Hospital where the QC Francis investigated what had gone wrong, and he said actually this is core of this is about purpose. The management of the hospital was so fixated on saving money they actually forgot about the fundamental importance of safety and standards of care. And I think so it's not just business that this can happen to, I think, where people are very, very narrowly focused. And the other thing that can happen, I think, is that cultures can become very compliant places where people aren't free to raise issues that they really need to raise. And so there's something about, you know, because we're all weak, and we all, if you like, I think, have kind of slightly weakly magnetized moral compass, if you want. And I think the culture of organizations and how people are encouraged to speak out, whether there's genuine openness and honesty. Most people go to work not wanting to do right, wanting to do good, and wanting to contribute what they can. There are a few rogues, but not many. And I think the question is how we create organizations which really play to that good in people and create spaces in which people can genuinely ask and call out questions. So whistleblowers, people making contributions to change when that's absolutely needed. And I think that's the kind of shift we need to see. But you're right. I mean, there always have been corporate scandals, but I think we could move a long way towards encouraging much, much better general practice through recognising this way in which people actually are and creating organisations which enable people to be much more themselves when they go through the door.
You came from the private sector into the charitable sector, Rosamund.
And, yeah, that's right.
And there's all kinds of legislation here in Northern Ireland which basically in most workplaces means that you leave your faith, your religion at the door or hang it up with your coat before you go and sit down, whatever. Was that very much the way that things worked when you were working in business before you came to charity, or was there any kind of feeling of people coming in wanting to do good?
No, I think it was something you pretty much kept to yourself, whatever your religious beliefs, you kept it to yourself, or maybe discussed it with a small group of people that you knew. So I think it was a shock for people when I went to Christian Aid. And I remember heading up the corporate social or corporate social responsibility platform. And again, it was because this is something that we need to do, that we have to do. I think it has really changed since then. I think businesses are becoming more aware. I hope they're becoming more aware that we're all operating in this world, and we all have an impact in this world, and even in terms of our climate change policies and taxation policies. So in Christian Aid Ireland, we work closely with businesses. We try and ensure that they do make a difference, that they are a force for good, and that they can see the impact that their policies are having. So, for example, we're working, we did send in a number of postcards to Ulster Bank, and to say that, you know, banks, there needs to be a big shift. Banks need to stop investing in fossil fuels and start investing in renewable energy. So it's not about the bad and the good, but it's about, you know, each business is made up of individuals who, as you know, said, all want to do something good. And I think there's a way in which we can work together to make people become aware of that and to start pushing for that.
It's a question I asked Dr. Brian Grimm. Can religion, faith, actually be good for business? Let's hear from him again.
Well, it really depends the degree to which the person puts to practice their faith.
Can they leave it at the door and practice it on certain days of the week but not others?
I know a number of people that do that, and it's not because they are trying to be unfaithful to their faith, but once they come into the business world, they think, well, you know, this is about making money, the bottom line. So they sort of leave it at the door. I think that there's a new openness to bringing faith into the workplace. And just one example from the UK, Ernst & Young has recently released a course for their clients called Religious Literacy for Organizations. And so in that, they're trying to help business people and people that are working in business, see how faith is part of everybody's life, even if you don't have one. That's still a part. You have beliefs and practices that are important to you. So this course helps people understand how to navigate religion for success. So, for instance, if you're trying to do business in a Muslim-majority country and trying to do some business with the United Arab Emirates, knowing something about Islam is beneficial. And if you have some Muslim employees on staff, they may help you in different ways to do better business in the Muslim world. So, you know, if you acknowledge people's faith in the workplace and let them be themselves, that can be a boon for companies in a number of ways.
It's Dr. Brian Grimm there. Just a few minutes left in the programme. And I wonder, one of the big changes, I suppose, that's taken place over the last number of years has been the internet. I know Des Woods was talking to me about how that had transformed their business. You know, so much of this stuff can be online now. What sort of difference has it made to, if I could put it like this, Michael, the business of the Catholic Church?
Well, it's made everything much more accessible, and a negative part of that, in a sense, is that people don't feel as drawn to parishes, perhaps, as they did in the past. You'll find lots of people who now would describe themselves as very good, very devout Catholics, but their faith, their spirituality consists of participating in masses on the internet or participating in other devotional practices on the internet, but they're actually quite cut off from the rest of the Christian community.
And does that also mean it hits your funds if they're not sitting in church, they're not putting something in the collection plate?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like I meet young people at youth conferences and I ask them if they read the Irish Catholic, for example, and they say, you know, we read it on the website or we follow it on Facebook. And I always say to them, well, you're reading it for free then. And that I think is the same thing that's happening in congregations. If people are participating from a distance, then they're not contributing. They're not putting money into the collection plate. At the same time, I think it's a very good thing for religious organisations because it actually means people who have questions, people are seeking. They can do a bit of that seeking on the internet rather than having to darken the door of the church.
Right.
Because sometimes people who haven't been for a long time, that can be a bit intimidating.
Is it good for Christian Aid, Grossmond?
I think it is, definitely. The name Christian Aid may put some people off who don't quite understand who we are, what we're about. So going online means they can have accessibility to everything. They can see what we're actually about. And we're investing in a new website at the moment and hope that that will increase the traffic through the website and also increase our fundraising potential.
And is it getting your message across to the businesses that you want to get involved with you, Charles?
Oh, yes. I think it makes an enormous difference in terms of communication. I think it also makes and is continuing to disrupt in many, many ways, standard business models and ways of thinking. I think the openness and transparency which the internet and social media bring are very, very healthy in many ways. Customers can say what they like online. Employees can do the same through Glassdoor and in other ways. And there's nowhere to hide for businesses. And I think that openness is actually very positive. It also has the downsides that we're all aware of in terms of other things that are on the internet. But I think that paradoxically, the way technology is moving in businesses actually reinforces the importance of human relationships within organisations and with customers. So there's an ambivalence about it, but I actually think that it's very powerful, very powerfully positive.
It's been fascinating hearing about all of this, I must say. Thanks, all of you, so much for joining me for Inside Business this week. Time's up, I'm afraid. But my thanks to Michael Kelly, to Charles Wookie, Rosamund Bennett, to Des Woods and to Brian Grimm as well. The programme was produced by Niall Blaney. I'm Wendy Austin. You can stay in touch on Twitter at WendyTalksBiz with two Zs. Won't cost you anything. That's Inside Business, Sundays at 1:30, Mondays at 6:30. And there's a podcast whenever it suits you, so don't miss it.